by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are grass make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield.
Okay, Charlotte, how are you? How's it going up there in Missouri? You doing all right?
I'm doing good, yes. Thank you, George. We're doing really well.
These are the days. How did you say it? Love and what? What was it?
Forgiveness.
Yeah, love and forgiveness and over the holidays. What? Tell
it's the holy day. Yeah. These are the holy days. This is when fall happens.
Yeah.
And the earth goes to sleep. And it's a difficult time sometimes for people because they miss loved ones and due to war. A lot of different reasons people suffer pain during the holidays. And also we confront our interpersonal relationships with our families are challenged during the holidays, because sometimes we problem solve in our relationships by putting distance, you know, between us.
Right.
And sometimes we have to come together. And anyways, it's just there's a lot of pressures on today's family that I don't think were there 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, there's so much, and the materialism is so great, isn't it? Huh?
Yeah, the pressure to, like, purchase a nice, adequate present, you know, is always there. And
yeah,
then,
go ahead.
But you always want it to be heartfelt, you know. For me,
yeah.
And me and my family, George, and I think you can attest to this, you know, it's a spirit of giving a gift. You know, it's the thoughtfulness. I love getting baked goods for the holidays.
Right.
And that somebody took the time and effort to try to perfect, you know. An expression of their art, something that they love to do. Or if someone were to paint me a picture or write me a letter, or just, you know, or even, you know, giving somebody money frequently, don't you find, George, is a very needed gift in today's hard economic time. So
it is.
So when you gift somebody money that you don't expect in return, you know, you're gifting it to them, you're giving them a gift card, you know, or you're giving it, and you're not expecting anything back in return. And
yeah, a friend of mine I had supper with last night, what he does, he buys those gift cards, and then the people can buy what they want, see?
Exactly.
You know? And he doesn't know exactly what will please them. Instead of having to take something back and getting something else, you can just go and buy exactly what you want. I do that sometimes, too, during Christmas.
No, I suspect that a lot of people will say, oh, that's a cop-out because you're not, you know, you don't know what the person really likes. That means you don't really know them. And that's not true. My daughters love books. You know, if they were to get gift certificates to a bookstore, no one's going to know what, you know, is on my daughter's reading list, you know. So when they give them a gift certificate to a bookstore, I'm thrilled. And also, I'd like to stress, George, buying our presents from domestic producers, whether it's electronics.
Local, small retailers.
Yes, yeah, supporting the retailers that the mom and pops. Supporting
yes.
local artisan, supporting craft, supporting, you know, you understand what I'm getting at.
Right.
A gift of handmade jewelry by a local artist can be just as powerful and meaningful as something from a fancy department store, you know?
Oh, more so. That's heartfelt, isn't it?
Right. I mean, if you're able to do something like that. Or,
right.
you know, a lot of women just love jewelry. And to get something
yeah.
that's handmade and locally,
right.
It's a good gift idea. But we're talking the superficial stuff right now. The real reason for the season is to embody the Christ consciousness of a forgiveness and to emulate the Christ that's in all the earth's religions, like Christianity, the Hebrew, the Jew, the Islam, whatever. But the point is, you know, this is a time of the birth of the Son of God. It's a symbolic gesture of...
Yeah, you're right about that. I've used this, you know, there's controversy about the date, and you know, religions have their own views. And I've always used this as a time to concentrate on forgiveness and love and things like that, see?
Yes, and not get caught up in names of deities, so to speak.
Yeah, if you get caught up in the religions, then you can argue until... You know what I mean? Hell freezes over, and it won't make a difference to either side sometimes.
To the human condition, right. The genuine need of each other at this time is that we show love, support, forgiveness towards each other.
Right. You know, that's something important. Nelson Mandela passed away recently over in South Africa.
Yes, he did.
And one of the most important things, of course, he had embraced Marxism ideas and communists and socialists and all that within the country. He was trying to get all the allies he could get against a very apartheid government. But the most important thing I think he did after he took power, he had that, a Truth and Reconciliation Commission set up.
Yeah, in fact, they're having, there's a very interesting documentary
that helped, you know, heal, see.
Yes, it's currently available on Netflix, and it's about the struggles that continue in post, you might say, apartheid Africa, South Africa.
Yes.
And they're having, it was a look at the way healthcare was now distributed to the full population, which would include, quote unquote, the black population. And it's phenomenal, look at capitalistic, medicine and state medicine. And phenomenal look at the technologies that they have that can save us these days. But what's happening today, and Nelson Mandela would want people to know, is that there's a lot of underserved populations in South Africa still due to the geography and the resources that are committed. For example, I'm going to break this down, okay, George? I'll try to be specific. But in American medical, we have first responders who stabilize and immediately evacuate somebody to the hospital, whether it's via helicopter, a land ambulance, or boat, or some other, you know, but that's the protocol. Unfortunately, in South Africa, to most of the black population who live out beyond the more populated South African nations, what they do is the paramedics go out there and they have to stabilize for up to 2 to 3 hours before transportation arrives. So today in South Africa, there are people dying because they're not getting, the proper timely transportation to medical. You know, these lives could be saved.
Okay.
And in America, I live in rural America, George, and I know our healthcare, for example, here, we need to be signed up in the system of a capitalistic system of Medivac services. And most people that I'm aware of in northern Missouri do not pay that. They do not pay for the helicopter service to get themselves and their loved ones from, say, an accident scene or a farm accident scene or, you know, automobile accident scene to the hospital. I once had to call an ambulance for a man who was stung by a bee out here in rural Missouri, and he went into full, it took 20 minutes plus for the ambulance to reach us. And it almost cost the man his life because he went into anaphylactic shock where his throat had swelled shut and everything. But I managed to get a Benadryl pill down his throat before he went sort of rigid. And so at any rate, we have those same kind of problems here in the South, in the North, in the West, not so much. But there's a definite strain on our medical care system, and that's why prevention, right?
Right. You know, that prevention is what I think that's left out of this Obamacare, isn't it? Is it? Is it in there?
I honestly, George, all I have done, and listeners, I apologize for failing you, but all I've done is ask the officials, and when I say officials, I mean the people that work in the city government,
yeah,
county government, and our municipality, the city government, as well as the school district. And I said, has anybody know of any successful signups for the Obamacare? And that's the only question I ask. And you know, I'm not very connected media-wise. I do not get television service beyond
right.
Netflix. And I rarely check the news because it's just, I'm happier without it. And nobody that I'm aware of has successfully signed up. That's all I know.
Right.
I did see a very bizarre sign-up desk at Walmart.
Yeah.
For this government rollout.
Really?
And I was rather perplexed and confused at this unmanned table. It was sort of like, come
there
up
wasn't anybody
to the
there.
Table. There was nobody there. And it was like, I guess a person was supposed to go up to rip off a piece. It was like a calendar, you know, you just keep taking one piece and one piece and one piece. And then for that information, then you go online and you get online for,
Oh. Okay.
And you know, it's interesting. It's this little old town that I'm in, George, it has been wired with fiber optics.
Really?
God. Yes. But the people living here cannot afford the iPads, the laptops. The CPUs.
Well, how about, is it,
but you can get
cable.
Access at the library. You, a
oh,
person
okay.
could go to the library and get access.
What's the population there? 2,500? 3,500?
No, way less than that. Half that.
About 2,000, something like that?
Less than that. Less than that. About 1,200.
Is that right? Man.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
I mean, our high school classes are like 30 to 50 people.
Okay.
Or, you know, young adults.
Right.
For graduating
well, you could say your girls graduated the top 50 in the class.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, you could. They'll say, oh,
right.
That's great,
so
you know.
Yeah, so, now what do the holidays mean to you, George? What is Christmas?
Well,
I know you're very creative, and over the years you've shared with me some phenomenal stories, some phenomenal music
that you actually created. I wrote 9 stories for Christmas. There are 7.
Oh, I remember one time, George, you read me that story, and I cried in a parking lot.
You read it. You cried like a baby. You did.
I did.
I feel sorry
it's
for
you. Wonderful story.
Well, I've issued them through the Amazon now, and if you go on our site, The Secret Truth, .com, you can find them there, you know, how to get to the sales site there on Amazon. But tonight I'm supposed to read two of the stories to a truth group here in Austin, Truth Seekers.
Oh,
and
wow.
So, and then I did get in, I ordered about 35 books, hardback books, not hardback, but, you know, paperback, and they came in a couple of days ago, so I do have copies that
I ordered one and
yeah.
May I get a signed copy please?
Yeah, you bet. I'll send one for you, one of these that I have. But and also I was gonna email you one of the ebook copies too. But I've been telling friends about some of these like yourself, you know, when I told you that story. And I've had people cry right in front of me, you know?
Oh yeah. It's utterly moving.
Yeah, I mean, and Jim, you know, our friend Jim here, he thinks they're very realistic characters in the stories. He thinks they're real authentic sounding people, you know, so.
Well,
anyway.
How did you come to these characters, George? Were they people in your past? Are they amalgamous, or what do you call that? Are they just a collage of personalities, or how did you come to these characters?
In my office, I had a couch there, and 5 nights in a row, I laid down and thought out each separate story of the first 5, and then got up at my computer and wrote the short story from start to finish without stopping.
Wow.
And then,
really inspired.
But I was crying at the end of the story laying on the couch. I was actually crying about my own story when at the end, and I would get up and go to my computer just a few feet away in the office there, and I'd type it out on the computer.
So it was therapeutic for you, even though it wasn't your story.
Yeah, I think it was. I think a writer, you know, you get rid of a lot of baggage and emotional problems and conflicts writing through those things. Yeah.
Yeah, journaling. My daughter, as you know, my oldest is with child, and I'm going to be a grandma. And
okay. Oh, good.
She's an she's an avid journal keeper, and she has been for probably 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
And back when she was young and in high school, I would say, be sure and write that down for the therapist.
All right.
The bad joke. Bad joke. Well, you know, when you're parenting a teenager, things can get rough. You know, it's as far as today's world. You know, everybody knows. I'm not saying anything new when I say that the culture has a mighty big influence on our children.
Well, you know, I phoned up that guy about the culture. He wrote the book, The Cheating Culture.
Oh, yes, I recall that. Mm-hmm.
And I actually got him on the phone out at the university he teaches at or lectures at, and he said he was pretty well finished with that book. He didn't even want to come on my show, our program here, and that he was pretty well finished with The Cheating Culture, you know. And then I went back, and several months later I started thinking, it's progressed from the cheating culture to the corrupting culture.
You know, my children talk about the school officials who they use the word corrupt. They say there is corruption at their local high school.
You know, I never noticed that.
Cronyism. It's like a form of favoritism, and it's sort of like everybody can guess what's going to happen next because of who's relationships are with who, you know, and whose interests, who's the most powerful in the community, and how, who gets their way and this such a stuff.
My
children actually say there is corruption, you know, locally, and I regret. That's why we're not going to reveal my location, okay, because I don't want to single out any one particular American school. It's not fair. Right. They're all being strangled by the one child left behind still. They're totally dependent on federal monies.
Yes.
The tax basis, nobody is paying real estate taxes enough to support a school. They're just not. Because you can't really put that burden. George, you've been an appraiser, and in the real estate world for coming on 50 years. And you've been a tax expert, tax consultant in court in your past. And I see that there's a huge gap between the market appraisal and the appraisal that's down at the courthouse.
Right.
You know, a home might be on the market, say, for $100,000, but the value of it that's tracking at the courthouse for tax purposes is that the house is only worth
$2,000. Right.
Cannot support a school.
Cannot support
a school.
Yeah,
so they get their money from the federal level.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
I don't like taxes on personal property any more than anybody else. Because I think it's a form of, it endangers your ownership.
Well, without federal inputs or salaries or not salaries necessarily, but checks into your community where you live, it wouldn't exist, would it? Huh?
Nobody's would. Yeah, we're all you drive across the United States, it's like we're all the same. You could go
big box
stores, the schools, the whole nine yards, all the way down through. You know, the culture is very monoculture.
With
the exception of the stresses that have been on the individuals within those specific regions, the cultural human stresses. But physically, the quality and standard of life and et cetera is pretty bland. There's no mom and pops hardly anymore. You know, you enter a city from the freeway and it looks terrible. Doesn't look welcoming. You know, you got your fast food, which puts you in an early grave.
I know.
Bookstores are overpriced.
Well, you've got having several people up there recently succumbed to cancer. And didn't you say that the hot spots from Fukushima settled in there, a plume or something, or what?
Not Fukushima. I recently learned that northern Missouri and southern Iowa, and the way I understood it would be like the first tier two of counties into northern Missouri south and into Iowa north. And this area got double whammied from atomic bomb testing that they did in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. I guess it would have been more in the 50s and 60s because what happened was, according to this documentary, again, I defer to Netflix, that I watched, and basically they informed me that northern Missouri and southern Iowa had been exposed to two unforeseeable contaminations of, I believe it was cesium-131, George. You might have to correct me on the cesium part, but cesium-131 they had miscalculated the tonnage and the type of atomic detonation with the different materials they were using, and they ended up with, like, massive amounts of contamination out of two, would have been large megabombs, but ended up being, like, 15 times greater than what they anticipated. And the fallout from these megabombs that ended up being mega-megabombs, because they were much larger than what they thought they were designed to do.
Oh, man.
They performed beyond, they were far more damaging than they had ever anticipated. And the debris of the nuclear radiation fell, the solid particulates fell northern Missouri, southern Iowa. And, yeah, we have an absolute epidemic of cancer. We are burying one person a year. And it's tragic. I'm personally losing family members, and I see there's not a, virtually not a street in the small town that doesn't have somebody fighting a very serious cancer.
Right.
And then I saw, George, I went online, and they've been recently, you know, there's like a 30 to 50 year secret. They will not release the information, top secret, for 30 to 50 years, you know, depending on its classification. Well, this nuclear atomic bomb testing from the 50s only was recently declassified. And I went online, and I found out that there was a hearing. There have been hearings about the nuclear waste buildup, about, you know, we got some really big atomic waste, nuclear waste issues that are absolutely paramount that we address, that we have our own Fukushimas on everybody's doorstep. We all have one. It doesn't matter what region you are in the United States, or even Canada, you know.
Well, I'm convinced now that nuclear energy, you know, along the lines of these plants, like in Fukushima and here, was really a terrible mistake. See?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And
the material itself is just too long-lasting. It's hard to deal with it afterwards, so it just contaminates the environment. You can't do much.
Yeah, we're about to make our environment unlivable for our own species through radiation contamination, and this is really stupid. I mean, this can be avoided.
Well, the Bering Sea fishery area up there is being contaminated also off of Japan.
I personally, George, will not be consuming any seafood for the foreseeable future unless I know of a farm or something that's been
stay away from any kind of seafood, period, because you don't know always where it's coming from. See. And they're shipping it all.
So if I had a local fish farm or something where I knew they had controls in place to make sure the water was not contaminated, they did the testing on, you know, virtually every other fish, or they made sure the environment that the fish were raised in was radiation free, I would consume that seafood. However, anything off the coast of the Mexico, right, George, you got that, it's not an accelerant, but that
well, you got El Nino and La Nina.
Oh, those hot, cold, but I'm talking about the dispersants that were used to
control
the oil spill.
Yeah, the Gulf of Mexico.
So down there, you got a different kind of carcinogenic contamination in the food supply.
Well, it's in the northern part of the Gulf, Louisiana, Mississippi, you know, Georgia in there more than anywhere else.
And you got to be careful, though, still with that food, you know what I mean?
But
I heard reports there were people on land getting sick. Recall that, George? Do you remember that?
Yeah, there are people sick. Yeah.
Sick from that.
There were people that went out and tried to, you know, scoop up some of the contaminants and, I mean, the oil and stuff like that. The dispersants was the worst thing they could have ever done in the Gulf, because it broke it up and scattered it everywhere. And
instead of remediating.
Oil Eaters out of Dallas is a company that could remediate it totally with enzyme type of interaction.
Right.
You know, there's all kinds of small bacteria floating on the ocean's surfaces, okay? And the way that they do is they get these enzymes going along with the oil, and the result is totally eaten away and converted back to natural you know, elements through enzymes. The enzymes eat the oil, and the output, the result of the enzymes is a natural, get back to water and whatever is in the ocean anyway.
George, thank you so much for educating me on that. I really was not aware of that remediation process until you dug it up, and that's what every American needs to know about.
Well, this Oral Eaters company out of Dallas was turned down by EPA.
Drastically? Oh, that is so wrong on so many levels.
And they could have totally cleaned it up. Not totally, not every little bit and piece, but they could have cleaned up the majority of it.
They could have remediated it so that it had been.
They could have healed it.
They could have healed it instead
of. ExxonMobil was putting out the dispersants, and so the EPA ordered all those millions of gallons or whatever it ended up to be from ExxonMobil. See.
And somebody made a lot of money on that. Now let's go fix the problem.
There's a lot of chemicals there that they used.
Yeah, somebody made a lot of money on that. Now let's go fix the problem.
Yeah, but
they did their cronyism, they passed the buck, and we still got a contamination problem.
Now Fukushima, there's four plants that were there, and several melted down, and number four is in shambles still, but it's still standing. But it has all the storage in underwater of those rods, storage rods, but some have been broken and stuff like that in there, and they're trying to pull those out, but they can't get close to that. They have to do it with a remote type of robots and stuff. It's not going to work, and it's going to result in a crumbling, a breaking of those tubes to where there's a fire generated, see? And once there's a fire that starts consuming those in there, there's 200 feet away, there's a big 200 yards away, there's another storage in there. Of light material, not quite as. And what happened was, old man Bush, back in his administration, the story goes, I can't give you the exact definite sourcing on this, but it sounds like it's credible. Was that the old man Bush administration made a secret deal with Japan to develop nuclear weapons? Okay, that's why they were stockpiling this stuff. See. At these different sites in Japan. That's why they had more than they should have, in stories like that. But to offset China's rise in military dominance in the area, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so they were going to let Japan equip itself with nuclear weapons to offset the Chinese rise of military dominance in the area, which probably makes sense from a military viewpoint, but from a viewpoint of that being very dangerous material, see what happens, see. Of course, nobody had a vision to do that except, Caldicott, Helen Caldicott out of Australia, she'd been against this from the word go. I mean, from the beginning.
Yeah.
She was always against a nuclear power scheme that was set out. And what was that our guest in the past came up with? Was it it wasn't strontium or something like that, was it? What was the material?
I do apologize. We have covered so much, and I honestly did not retain that information.
Anyway,
I know where to get it.
Yeah, he came up with a different material that was much safer than uranium and plutonium and stuff like that it produces, Those are very dangerous materials to deal with because of the long-term radiation effect that they have. But right now, Fukushima is still continuing. There's groundwater leaching through the underground into the ocean, picking up radioactive in there. They have 1,000 tanks up there surrounding the area.
Wow.
Storing very highly radioactive water. And I'm still planning, along with your help, this Fukushima Solutions World Conference. And there's people that we've got to do it. We just got to do it. It's got to be here in Austin. It'll be by Skype. We don't have to fly anybody in. We'll have the world's experts. But there was a recent talk show host that expressed a sentiment that nobody wants a world conference because they're going to express the idea that there's no real solution to the Fukushima site problem. See?
Mm. Yeah.
And I don't know. They're talking about building a wall underground and freezing it and stuff like that and at least stopping the water, the groundwater, from coming through into the ocean. Stuff like that are being entertained and so
forth. That's like mega engineering.
But it could take 4 to 5 years. 4 to 5 years just to do that, and we've got this ongoing radiation problem.
Maybe this has been the plan to get rid of us all along.
I don't know. Dr. Apsley, who we interviewed recently a few weeks ago, he has a book out, and he says that he has graphs on there, animated, of the North Pacific there, and it's actually polluting already a good portion of the North Pacific. And all around Hawaii and stuff, and the West Coast is very vulnerable to that contamination. And if additional radioactive material gets into the air from Fukushima, very deadly, and the plumes come up, and they're blowing towards Tokyo, which is like 120-130 miles to the southwest there, south-southwest, it could take out major portions of Tokyo. It's very dangerous, and they're lying. Everybody's lying about the whole thing. They put a lid on it.
What about the pregnancy? What's happening on with health of the children?
Right now, the doctors that are in the know are suggesting abortions. They suggest not having children anywhere close by in those villages and cities in that area.
Oh, that's so sad.
And this is way worse than Chernobyl.
Yeah, how many people were swept away by the tsunami? There was a great loss of human life.
Oh, it was in the thousands that died, and the material.
I know, compared to the disaster that happened in the Asian Ocean, what was the one that took 240,000 lives?
Well, that would be the other one, the Indian Ocean tsunami.
Indian Ocean,
Indonesia. Yeah,
Indonesia, correct.
Yeah, that was up there in the hundreds of thousands of people.
Japanese team left, but it was still horrifying to know that many people are gone.
Well, the cities along the coast are the ones that got hit, and what happened on the Fukushima was they cut down a part of that hillside and lowered that site much lower to the seawater level. See what I mean? Then maybe they should have. So they should have kept it up on the hill away from any tsunami. Then they put the generators in the basement, okay, and the pumps down there too. See, the pumps were below the water line eventually during that, and it knocked out the ability to go in there and start pumping, even using the pumps. The pumps were knocked out. So the electric pumps were knocked out, and then the generators were knocked out too by the wave that came in because they were below the water line level of the tsunami. So it was a total misengineered thing, and the catastrophe that is still ongoing and developing is unprecedented in the world's history. I'll say this, the greatest political event that's happened and most diabolical one is 9/11, and the most diabolical or the worst physical event has been Fukushima for the world's physical health, you know?
Yeah.
And it's ongoing. We need to address it, and we're going to get to it here in the latter part of January or February. There's people that are willing to come in on this with us, and I'll just have to get a room out there at UT and get it going, you know. We're late. I'm late. I failed in getting this going sooner. But maybe right
well,
now.
The lady Caldicott.
Helen Caldicott.
Yeah, she did. She did a fabulous
a year ago this March 11th coming up, she did a symposium. It was 2-year anniversary of the Fukushima, and she did a wonderful symposium, and it's online, and we've had click-offs on it on our site where you can go to it and listen to it, and it was on demand now. I saw it live most of the time when it's happening in New York. But they had a 2-day seminar, and it was a symposium, but it was primarily on the medical side of it, okay? We need to come in on our first day. We need to do remediation of the site, and then the second day, that would be on a Saturday. Then on a Sunday, health, personal health, preventative, measures getting rid of, passing through our bodies, any radioactive materials and isotopes, stuff like that. So, and the Sunday would be people more people are off then, and I think we'd have a bigger audience nationwide on Sunday for the personal health aspects of it.
That's a very important aspect of it.
Right. We recently,
from here.
Charlotte and I produced a deal up in Dallas recently, and it was on the 21st of November, and I had that Judith Baker on there, Charlotte. Lee and I, she wrote that book entitled Lee and I. She was a girlfriend of Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yes, I recall you giving me a phone call about that.
Yeah, and she was very interesting. And also, I found out that Jim Mars had written a postlogue or whatever, prologue to it, I think, on that book.
Really?
And I found out also that Jim Mars was still working on a bachelor's degree in journalism at, I believe, North Texas State, I think he said, and at the time that the Kennedy assassination occurred, and he focused in on that immediately because it was in his area, and then he became a police reporter after that, and he probably, from what I could tell, and he lectured to us also at the symposium, he's probably has the single most knowledge about anyone on the JFK assassination. He consulted to Oliver Stone also. Okay.
Can you give us the book reference?
Well, it's Crossfire. It's his latest, is the book that's come out a few years ago. He's updated it just recently. And when you and I did that 4 hours in the Texas School Book Depository, that book wasn't inside that library there.
See? Is it yet?
I don't know yet. But we did that about 4 or 5 years ago, and it wasn't there then. But the problem with the Texas School Book Depository Museum and the caretakers and all those people, they might be well-intentioned, but they're perpetuating the lie about, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald being the only, you know what I mean, sniper. They have a sniper's nest up there. Remember we went up there and saw that, looked at that?
Yes, I recall that.
And then I went down, and I don't know if you're with me, I walked off from behind the picket fence out to that X. They took out the X. This last November, Charlotte, they erased it in the street.
They don't want people doing the math anymore?
Yeah, they did it the day of the Memorial Day service. They were out there taking it out that day. And anyway, I paced off to that X, and it was about 55 feet. That's pretty close. So.
Wow.
But Alex went up there, and we were backing him up. We did the symposium, which he didn't have any part of. But then, of course, we were giving him moral support on the other. We didn't get down to Dealey Plaza on the 22nd. We got isolated on our ride. But anyway, we gave him a lot of moral support. And then I watched on television the local news. At the same time, I was watching him, and I could, on his own televised activist portrayal of what he was doing there. And what happened was that the Dallas police treated Alex Jones okay. It was a county that came in, marshaled and commanded by the Homeland Security, that set up a line, a picket line, and just pushed him back out of the area.
So the county was the one, not the city?
Yeah, the county sheriff's department, the sheriff's deputies were commanded by Homeland Security, and they got up a real big line of sheriff deputies and auxiliary and everybody else, and they just pushed all the activists that were with Alex out of the area, about a block or so out of the area. And they knocked one little girl off her father's shoulders and knocked another lady down and injured her. And
I hate the word homeland. I really do.
I
don't like that word homeland at all. I just cringe that I know Christians of the Holocaust, of the Christian that were suffered, Hitler.
Yeah.
Hitler was elected.
That's right.
The Christians, the homeland is not a good word for us to be using.
Well, the thing is that they brought a bunch of, a German scientist and so forth, and Nazis over to this country after World War II and put them to work here. And so actually they've nurtured just the worst kind of fascist system you could ever imagine here in this country now.
Yeah, Yes, yes.
And you know, like that the Grey Wolf book and all that, and the movie, and you know, Gerard Williams' book and all that. And then Manning, there's a Manning that wrote a book called Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and he authenticated much of what had gone on in the 80s, actually right after World War II, but the book was written in 1982, I believe it was published. But so, I mean, what they've done is they've established a second Reich right here, a fourth Reich, see? In this country. That's the problem with
this. But it's hidden. People can't exactly see it.
Well, if you speak in these terms, it's too much for most Americans, see? And, of course, I have connection to the Tea Party people here in Texas. And when I go and support some of their activities, which we do on some of the webcasts and stuff, they're okay up to 70-80%. But when it comes to the National Defense Authorization Act, they voted for it. So they fell on the with Patriot type of overtures, but they fell on the wrong side. See, they fell on the authoritarian side, which they should not. They should try to vote on the individual civil rights and freedom side. But they fell on the authority side. The military industrial authority complex has them by the huevos. That's the problem. See.
Yep.
But anyway. Anyway.
Well spoken.
Yeah, well, huevos, a little Spanish there. people that don't know what that means, they can go look it up, I guess. But anyway, it's the truth, but we still need to reach out to these people. Now, Ted Cruz's wife is a vice president with Goldman Sachs. Okay? Yeah, Heidi Cruz is a vice president out of Houston with Goldman Sachs. Ted Cruz then is obligated through his wife to Goldman Sachs to a certain degree because that's where part of their bread is buttered on. See what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
She's managing over $1 billion worth of energy securities out of Houston, so they're right there with the oil people, see, in Houston. Now, that's what the Tea Party people, they're not aware of that, some of them, and they're not, snapping. They don't have much snap in some of these areas because Ted Cruz speaks so eloquently, you see, about the right things that a conservative cares about. So it's easy for him to, he's very sincere sounding too. But as long as his connection to his wife to Goldman Sachs is there, they're just in there with the big money one way or another.
Yep.
See what I mean?
Yep.
And so what you know, that I'm bringing this out slowly but surely. I'm backing Deborah Medina for comptroller of the state, and she's got a good chance. Her latest poll figures show that she's in the lead right now.
Oh,
and
great.
We're going to have her on. There's a primary coming up in March, and she has a good shot at winning that. So March or May, I think it is. But anyway. She has a good chance of coming out dominant in the primary. So we'll certainly keep supporting her. And she's a very, very nice person and very, very honest person, very good person. But what else have you been thinking of, Charlotte, besides the holidays and different things? Or are you going to go to Washington, D.C. soon, right?
Yes. Actually, not D.C. itself, Springfield.
But are you going to – do you have any plans around the area beforehand?
Well, it's a real hike. It's a real hike to get around the D.C. Mall, you might say. Shopping mall.
Yeah.
It's a lot of walking.
Right.
And, you know, they're talking about futurists. I saw a really neat depiction of Washington, D.C. with 100% automated vehicles.
Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah.
It was interesting. That's for sure. But they called them, D.C.'s got a lot of congestion, the freeways and everything, and very...
Well, when we've been up there, they have those cameras that look like combat cameras almost, you know, everywhere, huh? And
absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's just military-occupied city, you know. But what interested you the most up there, Charlotte, in the Washington, D.C. area?
Honestly, I'm fascinated with the art, the way they could, those columns are made out of granite and the,
yeah.
and the sculptures. The masonry work, I guess, is what fascinates me. And what people chose to put memorials, what memorials were chosen. Also,
right.
the layout of the city is very, you know, it's obviously planned by Masonic planners.
Right.
That element is there, no doubt. And, George, wasn't I with you when I first observed the bust of Washington, George Washington, the first president of the current United States of America, you know, whatever.
Right.
The bust read, George Washington, a Mason, and the first president of the United States.
Right.
And that
right.
was very telling that it had the priorities of his standing, you know. However,
well,
I've seen it depicted in other places where it's George Washington, our first president, you know, and the other part is left out. Sort of like the moon landing where they supposedly televised the planting of the United States flag, and then they don't televise the planting of the Masonic flag that was supposedly planted there as well.
Right. In Austin, for example, if you go to most of the churches, the Protestant Christian churches here, and I'm not talking about the small Bible churches, but the mainline churches in Austin, if you go to the cornerstone, you're going to find an AL on there, a date, and it says AL, a certain date. If you take the date that the cornerstone was laid and you add 4,000 to it, that is the Anno Lucius date. AL is what that stands for, Anno Lucius, in the year of the light. Okay? And almost every major church in this city has a cornerstone with that date on it. And they were laid there by Masons.
The churches, you say?
The churches in Austin, if you go to the cornerstone, look at them. My church is there. It's got the AL on it, Anno Lucius date, which is 4,000 B.C. So what they do is they take the 4,000 B.C. and add it to the A.D. date, and that's how they get the Anno Lucius date. Okay?
Wow.
And so, I mean, and Washington was warned by John Robison shortly after he took power that the Illuminati had infiltrated the Masonic order in Europe and in the United Kingdom. And it's actually sent him a book on that subject, Proofs of a
Correct.
Conspiracy, 1796 or something like that. And Washington supposedly read it, but, you know, and trying to ward off this infiltration by the Illuminati. But I think they had set that in motion in about 1782 at Wilhelmsbad, a conclave outside of Frankfurt, Germany. It was in a Prussian principality there. And actually what they devised was a way to conquer the world through world government, through banking dominance and monopoly. That's what's unfolded since. The central banks have been privately owned, our Federal Reserve is privately owned, and so forth. And so that's actually had been the scheme of things. And it's worked because, you know, you can either worship a mammon, which is riches, and or you can worship God, and I think we've turned into a money worship system, you know. And it doesn't matter if you're an atheist or Bible thumper or whatever, most of the people are going for the money, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, even the church, they build big churches, and they go out and get more money, more contribution tied, you know, and all that. And it's all money, money, money. It doesn't matter if you're inside the church or outside the church, you know. Your daughter, your oldest daughter, surprised me years ago. I've got a little story to tell on her, Rachel. Remember
okay.
that talent thing we went to at Brent?
Oh, a long time ago, sure do.
Yeah, Brentwood Elementary.
In the yard. I mean, not
she
the yard, but the schoolyard.
Yeah, the schoolyard. Yeah, and she must have been like 12 years old then, or what? 10?
Oh, younger. Yeah,
10,
she was 10, in
10 or 11, something.
Yeah.
Anyway, she had a book, and I looked at the book. It was on strings theory, on on physics, about the building blocks of the universe, and it was about strings, what they call strings theory. You
right.
know? I thought to myself, oh my God, I thought Georgie's way behind times, you know. And you know what? Another thing. Go ahead.
Oh, right now she's reading. Oh gosh, it just escaped me. Anyways, please proceed, George. I apologize.
Anyway, Hunger Games. There's a second movie out. Have y'all seen it?
The girls have. I haven't. I intend to go see it, though. I love the books. It was for young adults, older teenagers, and I whizzed right through them. They're just wonderful books, just as smooth as a nice cup of coffee.
All right. Yeah, well, the author is a resident of Newtown. Yeah.
Where the
Sandy Hook thing took place. Now, if you see air photographs around the school there, it's got problems. That Newtown thing and the Sandy Hook thing, it's just there's problems with what really happened there. And they're actually keeping redacted and away from the press a certain number of pages on their final report. See? They haven't released it yet. So we don't know what the full story was. The vehicles that are surrounding the school are too closely parked to each other. Okay? The idea that I've sort of gotten of this is that there might have been some kind of exercise going on, okay? And then the shooter injected himself into the system, okay? Into this exercise, okay? And they did not think about warding off or making security for anyone doing that. That would explain why the around the school all those cars were parked so closely together, see? I mean, you just can't. All of these vehicles, you'd have to see an air photograph right around the school, all around the back and everything. It's like they were lined up for delivery type. You know what I mean? They were parked, you know, just parked in there just right. See what I mean?
Okay.
If this had truly been exactly what they had depicted and portrayed it to be, they would have been jumbled. They wouldn't have been parked that well organized together and lined up like they were. Okay? There's problems with the Sandy Hook. We don't know exactly. They're not telling us the full story. And it's very hard to conceive that one shooter could have, like that coroner said, there were two and three and four shots in some of the kids. You know, I'm not going for that exactly. See? I'm not accepting that the official story yet because something else went on. We don't know exactly. And it was tragic. And I'm not saying it wasn't tragic. But they are not telling us the full truth on this. We've got about 5 to 6 minutes left. Was there some additional things you wanted to talk about, Charlotte, that we didn't cover yet?
Well, we can get back to staying positive about the season, you know.
Yeah. And
because a lot of people, again, I would stress that this time of year could actually be very stressful for them because they've lost loved ones because of relocation, because of displacement, because of job insecurities, because of family issues. A lot of people may not view the holidays, you know, the way we would wish for them to be happy.
Right.
But, you know, that's life, and we just got to be there and love and support everybody to the best of our abilities. Buy local, buy American. My thoughts on the matter. How about you, George?
Well, you know, we've talked about, you know, our little slogan there about forgiveness. Well, I'm calling it a cult breaker now. It breaks cults. It's a cult breaker. Yeah, because when you forgive, you break yourself out of these cults that all these organized, whatever it might be, whether they're political, religious, something, they have their claws in us, see? So forgiveness of self and others is a cult breaker, okay?
That's an interesting way to.
Yeah, and I just started expressing it like that to people, and they seem to warm up to that general idea because it's a little bit different in thinking about it, see?
Mm-hmm.
And the second hour, I'm going to read a story on the air, probably. I don't know which one, but we'll get into that later. But anyways, let's see here. The latest on the Obamacare, you're saying that there's not many people there in your area signing up yet, right?
Yeah, you know what? Let me try something.
What?
I'm going to do a Google search, see if I can find
okay.
anything.
Okay.
How to apply for, we're not health care. We're just going to say health care.
Right.
Health insurance. It's health insurance is what it actually is, not health care.
Yeah.
I mean, really, we got to get our vocabulary straight. This is health insurance, not health care.
Oh, there was one question I wanted to ask you. Have you ever seen any episodes of Duck Dynasty?
Not yet, but I really need to because I ran smack face into the propaganda at Walmart. What's up with
them? You did? What did they say?
Yeah, I was everywhere, all for the holidays. Duck Dynasty this, Duck Dynasty that.
Yeah, the Duck Dynasty. Are they selling stuff or what? What is it?
Yes, they've taken over our Walmart locally.
They have?
Yes, there's all kinds of little items. Tell me your thoughts on it. I haven't seen any, George.
Well, you know, they got him for criticizing the gays and things like that. He was being interviewed, okay? And so they suspended him indefinitely from the program. The patriarch, Phil, okay, was the patriarch of the Duck Dynasty, was kicked off the air or suspended indefinitely by the producers and so forth. Now they're having second thoughts because there's an uprising of activists in support of him having the ability to express his own views outside of the show.
Wow.
And so it's backfiring on them, you know. And this political correctness, even Paglia out of Pennsylvania, she's going to bat. She's on the gay side herself, but she's going to bat for him, saying that the shutdown of his own personal opinions and civil liberties is like a fascist state, see? And so you're getting some very, very interesting people that are on either the gay side or the straight side going to bat for him, or at least saying that he has a right. They don't agree with him, but they're saying that he has a right to express his own opinions, and he shouldn't be penalized and kicked off his own program for expressing those opinions, okay?
Right.
I mean, if they're producing a program, well, these are...
A second. So it's offensive?
Yeah.
These we're expecting the Duck Dynasty to be pro-gay or anti-gay?
Well, no.
What's the story here? I'm confused.
Okay, here's the deal. The Duck Dynasty, the patriarch, Phil, is against the gay community because he's very religious and he strictly interprets the Bible as being against the gay, you know, lifestyle. So he expressed that on an interview, and then the producers kicked him off, suspended him, and then the uproar has come back. Many of
we got to – right. What's that scoundrel quote comes to mind? Sometimes in the defense of personal liberty, we must tolerate scoundrels and fools in order to ensure all of our liberties.
Exactly.
If we stifle this idiot
–
if we stifle this person, regardless of your view, some of us may think he's an idiot. Yeah. Some of us may agree with him. I happen to have a gay Catholic uncle.
Yeah.
And I've had to survive this, really. For everybody else, they're armchair quarterbacks on this topic, as far as I'm concerned. I've lived it.
Right.
I have a gay Catholic uncle. And, you know, as far as these things go, and I accept gay people, and I think it's a biological-based thing and environmental both. And whoever somebody chooses to put in their bed is their business, not mine. I don't want to know.
Yeah.
And I don't care if somebody is. I won't discriminate against them if they happen to be, you know, that way, except
I don't think we should be hateful against anyone, you know.
No, there's no reason to be.
Now,
I might set personal boundaries and be like, you know, I don't want you hitting on me. I'll tell
right,
you straight
exactly.
like that.
Right,
you know.
Right.
However, I'm willing to have that conversation.
Right. Well, look, we've come to the end of this hour, and thank you for listening, our listening audience out there. We'll be back on the second hour, and I'll tell one of my stories. Okay.
Thank you, George.
Thank you for listening. Okay. Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye.